Some say there are too many homeless animals in the United States, and as a consequence, one should be thoughtful about where one looks for a pet. This leads us to ask, where should one go to find a good pet? A local breeder, the rescue service, or a pet store?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,407th edition of the Food Chain Radio Podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there in San Jose del Cabo who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, when the daughter's dog passed away, she became very sad and teared up. Hoping to give her a better way to see the passing of a good friend, I said, "Honey, life is just a succession of good dogs." Not too much longer, the daughter was ready for another dog, and so we began the search for the next family friend. After searching for a while, we were presented with a choice between two Cocker Spaniel puppies. One was gold, the other was black. As you might imagine, the daughter wanted the gold one, and the wife wanted the black one. Not wanting two puppies underfoot, I thought a compromise might be in order, and said, "Let's take the black one home and call her Goldie." It worked, and we had many good years of friendship with Goldie, the black spaniel, before she, too, passed on. But that compromise did not address today's food chain question, which is, where should the Olson family go to find the next good dog friend? A local breeder, a pet store, or the animal rescue service? Here to give us some direction, we have Rachel Bellis, who is the director of the Animal Cruelty Investigations Department at People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which we all know as PETA. Rachel, welcome to the Food Chain.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me, Michael.
Please, please, please. Now, I've always wanted to ask, what is the ethical treatment of animals?
Well, the ethical treatment of animals is understanding that every animal is someone, that every animal wants to do what comes naturally to them, to either to forage or to have a family, to be free of pain and fear and manipulation. And that goes from our companion animals to agriculture animals across the board.
Almost like we should start treating animals like people, like we would want to be treated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when we talk about companion animals, we, you know, our dogs, our cats, any companion animal that we have, we should treat them as members of the family. We should treat them as we would our children or our cousins or our aunts. We should give them love and care and protect them and make sure that they're safe and happy. I think that's a good place to start.
Well, I see where PETA is pushing for a new dog walking law in Delaware. And I saw that and I thought, well, I'd fail, in which people if you have a dog, you'd have to walk the dog 3 times a day. And one of those walks would have to be an hour long. And I got to thinking, boy, I'd fail that because I only walk our dog twice a day. But I do walk him twice a day. And it is important to get them out, as it is important to get us out as well. So walking dogs is a great thing to do. And it's great for the neighborhood as well, because you get to meet everybody else with a dog and keep an eye on the neighborhood.
That's right. You know, and this push is really because we're seeing a lot of people that, you know, decide to bring a companion animal into their life, like a dog, and they don't really think about the time that they have to dedicate. And so it's really, you know, some people could say, well, there are more important things that we should be pushing laws for. But neglect is neglect. cruelty is cruelty. We're going to call it out. We're going to, you know, explain to people what a dog's needs are. And a lot of people may not know. But of course, when we walk our dogs, for example, it's really important to let them sniff, because that's how they communicate with each other. That's part of, you know, it's part of like their DNA of what their needs are. A lot of people, times we see people dragging their dog down the street, like while they're on the phone, you know, walking your dog. It's also like a perfect example to put your phone away if you can, you know, and just like spend time with your dog, breathe in the fresh air, smell the flowers, you know, not just let your dog do that, but also you should do that. It's a good opportunity for us to get exercise, but it's also like really necessary for our dogs. You know, I walk my dogs 3 to 4 times a day. I also have a backyard that I let them run around, but I understand the importance of walking them, letting them sniff, letting them be around other dogs, other humans, so that they're socialized. Not just having a dog and, you know, sticking them in a crate when you go to work. I mean, it's really like having an animal is a big responsibility. And, you know, we want to push this. We hope that it goes nationwide, you know, but it's really just to start talking about the issue of dogs need to be walked. You cannot just put them in a crate. You can't just walk them once or twice a day. They need more than that. And, you know, they're going to give you so much in return if you really pay attention to all of their needs. But I think, you know, I'm sure that you take good care of your dog.
And she takes good care of us, too. But it does work both ways, does it not? Well, let's see. Director of Cruelty Investigations Department at People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. You must see some real sad stories. But before we go, let's take care of some business, unfinished business. So apparently someone heard some unpleasant things said about PETA in my Pet Nation show with Mark Cushing, who is the author of the book with the same title. I found the book kind of interesting because he was talking about how we have become a pet nation, where our animals used to sleep outside. Now they're sleeping in the bed with us. How did they manage that? They took over the nation, kind of. And so I found that notion kind of interesting, because it really is true. We really have taken dogs into our lives in that respect. But apparently he said something that upset PETA. And if there's one thing we know about PETA, it is that their public relations department is always on the lookout for ways to fight for PETA's position with respect to the treatment of animals. And so here you are. And now, what was it that Mark Cushing said that PETA wishes to defend against?
Well, we do really appreciate the opportunity to respond to some of the things that he said. Well, one of the things that I remember from the podcast, and also just to clarify, I work in the Cruelty Investigations Department, which encompasses several different divisions, and I'm the Director of Local Affairs. So I do a lot of work locally within Virginia and North Carolina, which we kind of border on here in Norfolk. But one of the things that Mark said was that we don't want people to have animals in our homes as pets. And I hear that a lot, you know. Well, that
say that again.
Well, didn't he say that we don't want people to have pets? We don't want people to, or we equate it with slavery. He said something like that.
I must have missed that word. I just didn't want to hear it, but
I mean, the thing is that, you know, most of my coworkers, including me, we have companion animals at home. And so that is something that a lot of people, I have heard that, which is not true. We want people to be responsible companion animal guardians. We want people to take the responsibility seriously, not, you know, impulse, take an animal home on impulse, because it's a big financial burden. It's a lifetime responsibility. And something that he also said was that shelters are not full and that there was a shortage of animals. And that's, I don't know exactly where he got that information or where he's reading that or who he's talking to. But in our experience and from what we are seeing, there is an overpopulation crisis of companion animals, and that most shelters in the United States are absolutely overwhelmed and bursting at the seams with unwanted animals. We know that there are millions of homeless animals in our country, and only a small percentage actually make it to shelters, you know, and animals have to be euthanized because there just aren't enough good homes for them. And so the idea that we are lacking in companion animals is not true.
Well, I guess the local animal shelter here on the other side of the country would agree with you as well. And as a matter of fact, I hear them making the same statement. You got to come down here, folks, and find a companion. And we'll have the right one for you, but you have to come down and get it. Mm-hmm. So I guess there, we've settled that with Mr. Cushing. But at any rate, in his letter to me, Wes Burdett, who is a PETA's press officer, suggested that there is a U.S. homeless animal overpopulation crisis. And I guess that's something that I really think we should address. And I guess I want to know to what extent there is a crisis. Why is there a crisis? What do we do about it? And all of those things. So let's just start with, is there a homeless animal overpopulation crisis in the United States?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why our shelters are overburdened and bursting at the seams with homeless animals. We are seeing animals abandoned outside of shelters. There was just a recent case in Pennsylvania of the dog who was found taped up in the box outside of the shelter. And, you know, unfortunately, cases like that are not unique. We are seeing this more and more with prices. The cost of having a companion animal has increased. I mean, we know that everything, the prices, you know, with almost everything have increased. The cost of vet care has also increased. And so, you know, people are struggling in general. And
not only with money, but with time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, and, you know, when during COVID, we saw an increase in adoptions. People were home. So they went to the shelter, or they went, you know, unfortunately, they went to a breeder or a pet shop and they brought an animal home. But they didn't really think about the long term.
And then when they got it home, they got, oh, my goodness, this takes work. And as long as I'm staying at home, it's okay. But now right. that I have to go back to work, I'm in trouble. Will you take this dog, please? Something like that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Food Chain Radio Program Michael Olton with Rachel Billis, who's the director of the Cruelty Investigations Department with the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, which, of course, we all know as PETA. So do stay tuned when we come back. We're going to deal with the homeless population and figure out what we can do to solve this huge problem. So stay tuned. And the question is, where should the Olson family get their next pet? Where do you go to get a good pet? And so that's the question on the table today. Some say there's simply too many pets, and the reason we have too many pets is we're not thinking when we go out and get a pet about what that will mean into our lives. And it means a lot when you have a pet, especially if that pet is a companion and something that's beyond an animal. It's a pet. It's your companion. And you do think of it as a human to a certain extent. So it's a huge responsibility. And evidently, too many of us have taken on that responsibility for only a short period of time. And therefore, we end up with a lot of pets that are on the street. That's pretty much the way it works, right, Rachel?
Yes. People take on the responsibility without realizing that it could be 15, 10, 12, 14, 15 or more years, the financial responsibility as well. And so, yes, a lot of animals end up either being given away or brought to their local shelter, which is the place that people should be bringing their unwanted animals. They should absolutely not be giving them away on Craigslist or posting them on Facebook. You do not know who you are giving your animal to. Go to your local shelter.
And, well, would the local shelter know who you're giving the pet to then? Do they know they're giving the pets to? Is there a clearance of some kind? Do you have to fill out an application?
Yes. And if this is a reputable shelter, a person who wants to adopt would have to fill out an application, pay a fee, give some personal information. It's really our responsibility. And PETA does have a shelter. We have a shelter here in Norfolk. And we also have an adoption program. And it is our responsibility to find the best homes for those animals. And that is the responsibility of every shelter. And some shelters, unfortunately, have started lowering the adoption standards.
And when you have too many dogs or too many cats.
Yes. Well, yes.
We have to get rid of them, so...
Well, but get rid of them, no, Michael, because we have to find good homes for them. We don't want them to end up in worse situations. Animal shelters are supposed to be safe havens for unwanted animals. It is not their fault that they're there. It's not their fault that they were born into a world where there are just too many of them. And so it's really incumbent on the shelters to do everything in their power to find good homes. Now, unfortunately, like I said, there's been a big push to take on policies that in the end do not help animals, like lowering adoption standards, like turning animals away, like warehousing, crating animals, or giving them away to rescues, because the most important thing is to get them out the door, and that does a total disservice to animals. And then we could start talking about these no-kill policies. I'm sure you've heard the term no-kill.
Yes.
Yes. And this is sort of a pie in the sky idea that we are going to save all of the animals. And that's just not true. That's just not true. And in the end, what shelters do when they take on these policies is turn animals away, which is, we get people who leave animals in boxes outside of shelters or tie them up. And we're seeing this in case after case around the country. And I'm not necessarily saying that all of these shelters have turned them away, but in many of the cases, people felt that they had nowhere else to go because, especially if it's a taxpayer-funded shelter, you're paying to have this shelter open and you're not getting the services that you need.
So you're telling us that selection is indeed part of the ethical treatment of animals, then?
Well, you should be, if you're an open admission shelter, which is something that we think all animal shelters should be, then you're taking in all animals and you're making hard decisions. But that the best interest is that you're looking out for those animals. And if somebody comes to, you know, if somebody comes to a decision and they can no longer care for their animal, that's a really hard decision for most people. And if they're trying to do the responsible thing by taking their animal to a shelter, then that shelter should take in that animal because that person has already made the decision that they can no longer care for that animal. And when a shelter turns somebody away, people get desperate. Mm-hmm. You know, they leave the dogs outside. They tie them to a pole. They tie them, you know, near a police station. They abandon them. They give them away on Facebook or Craigslist. And so, you know, we are even, I understand, you know, it's a really complicated issue because our shelters, yes, are exploding with unwanted animals. We need people to adopt, not go to breeders or pet shops, but we also need people to really take the responsibility seriously and most importantly, get their animals sterilized.
Okay.
You know,
Amen to that.
Yes. Yes. Work with. Mm-hmm.
Now, why not go to a pet store or a breeder?
Why? There's no reason to when we have so many wonderful animals at shelters. You know, every time somebody purchases a dog, goes to a breeder or a pet shop, they're killing that shelter animal's chance at finding a loving home. There is no good reason. And, you know, now around 25% of dogs in shelters are purebred. So if that is something that is important to you or to somebody, then they can go to their shelter. You know, there are rescues that have certain breeds. If you love Chihuahuas, I love Chihuahuas. If you love Chihuahuas, you can go on like Pet Finder and you can find an animal within a certain, you know, mile radius to find that. But these are shelters and these are rescues. And that's where we need to focus on, not breeders and pet shops.
So you're saying that by going to a pet store, you're depriving of a rescued animal of the opportunity to find a home.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
I get you.
I mean,
the only reason I can think of to go to a pet store is to get a new friendly spirit that has not had a lot of trauma in life yet.
Do you mean like a puppy?
A puppy.
Shelters are full of puppies.
Ah, okay.
Shelters are full of puppies. I mean, I think the idea of shelters as being depressing places that only have these sort of broken, sad dogs, you know, that image is changing. Shelters that have the budget are spending a lot of money and time trying to recreate the animal shelter so that it's a nicer place for people to go, because there is that mentality that people think, oh, you know, I'm only going to find an abused or, you know, formerly neglected animal. That's not the case, but they also need homes. You know, I have a dog that, you know, was found on the streets of Mexico. You know, the first year and a half of his life was awful. And I, you know, and he's home with me and our other dogs. Like, he's amazing. I mean,
he probably has some street smarts.
He definitely does. He's a smart cookie. There are so many wonderful animals in shelters. And also, you know, when an animal comes into a shelter, if the shelter is doing what it should do, they are vetting the dog, you know, that dog is going to get sterilized. If they're not already sterilized, they're going to get microchipped. They're going to have behavioral testing. They're going to spend time with shelter workers so that the shelter has a sense of what kind of character this animal has so that they can best place, you know, him or her in the best possible home. you know, a lot of times with breeders, they're inbreeding. The animals don't come from very, you know, we know about puppy mills and where animals in pet shops come from. It's such an awful background. The way they are treated, the diseases and the illnesses that a lot of these puppies come with, you know, you're paying thousands of dollars with a breeder or at a pet shop, and you can go to your local shelter, do a wonderful thing by adopting an animal and pay a very nominal adoption fee that really covers the microchip, the sterilization. You know, I mean, shelters want to find wonderful homes for their animals, and they're just waiting there for them.
Is PETA the reason I no longer see pet stores in my community?
Well, I would like to think that PETA's influence has had something.
I just don't see them anymore. They're not here anymore. I don't know what happened to them unless it's you guys that talked them out of the world, I guess. Usually, you know, when it comes to animal rescue facilities, we think of dogs. I suspect it's because when dogs are loose, they get picked up. Not so much with cats. And when cats are thrown out the door, they become kind of feral and kind of fend for themselves. That true enough?
It is true. You know, shelters are also full of cats. And one of the reasons why a lot of shelters have actually started turning away cats is because there are so many of them. And we have a huge problem of people allowing cats to be outdoors or, you know, preferring to have colonies rather than take the cats to the shelter because they think that it's more humane. But, you know, cats living outside, it's, you know, constant terror for them. They are subjected to extreme weather, predators. They're also killing billions of wildlife every year.
Birds,
the songbirds, other small animals, and they're wreaking havoc, you know. And so it's important for people who have cats to keep them inside, get them interactive toys to keep them busy, have a nice perch for them to sit outside and or to sit in the window and look outside. But it's much safer to keep our cats indoors. And yes, unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of shelters that are just turning away cats. You know, here in our backyard, we are seeing shelters that are so overwhelmed with animal surrenders that they just stop taking in cats because, you know, cats who are born outside are feral. And once they reach a certain age, it's very hard to bring them inside. It's almost cruel because they're so used to being outside. And a lot of times they have, you know, they have to be euthanized. And with many shelters trying to, you know, have these high save rates of live animals, they don't want to euthanize, and so they just stop taking in cats. And that does a huge disservice to the cats.
And so they really do have an overpopulation of cats. And what do we do? What do we do with these, all of these cats that are running around then? What can we
sterilize? We want to decrease, really, the only way to decrease the number of cats that we have is to spay neuter. You know, PETA has 4 mobile spay neuter clinics that offer no to low cost spay neuter services. We do sterilize feral cats and we test them for feline AIDS and feline leukemia. And if they are found positive, we do euthanize them. And that's something that the caretaker or the guardian knows, you know, when they bring the cat, because that's something that's contagious. And, it's also very, you know, awful for the cat to suffer from that. But it's sterilized. You know, we have to promote low to no cost spay neuter services. And that's something that people can talk to their local and state elected officials about, offering free spay neuter, because we are booked, you know, we are booked months in advance. Because
for spay neutering?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. We mostly do no cost because, you know, if somebody wants to get their animals sterilized, you know, we're going to do that for them, or we're going to help them find a way to do that. And we just celebrated 250,000 animals sterilized since our program began in 2001, which is very exciting. And that's so many lives saved through prevention. And so really, you know, the idea of low cost spay neuter is getting is decreasing, you know, less and less communities offer that. But it's really something that we need to push. If people want to end euthanasia, they have got to push for spay neuter in their community.
Less is more.
Yes, absolutely.
The less we have to deal with, the more we can deal with it, I guess.
Well, the less cruelty, the less neglect, less animals on the street suffering.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is a Food Chain Radio program. We're talking with Rachel, and Rachel's with the Society for the... No, it's not. It's the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA. And today we're trying to figure out where we should get our next pet and how we should treat that pet in a way that is ethical. We are talking ethical treatment of animals with PETA, which is People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And so when we come back, I'd like to pick up instances that you're seeing where people are not ethically treating animals. You work with the cruelty part, and so that's what we'd like to talk about when we come back. Why are we cruel to animals? Do stay tuned.
How would you like to be part of a great mission?
You can help the Epoch Times fight for a free press.
America's news outlets no longer tell you the truth. In fact, 90% of the media is owned by just six corporations.
But honest traditional journalism isn't dead. You can find it in the pages of the Epoch Times. Go to readepoch.com and try it.
1 month for just $1.
When you do, you're supporting real news and helping us in the fight against fake news.
You'll read the truth about how China promotes communism inside the United States and why so many American companies hide the truth about China.
You'll read stories about American politics written without a political agenda.
It's journalism that you don't get from our dishonest legacy media and without the tyranny of big tech.
Be part of a great mission. Subscribe now, 1 month for $1 at readepoch.com. That's readepoch.com.
Life is short, and family is everything. Celebrate both with a Sunkist family reunion. Hello, I'm Heather from Sunkist Explorations. I will take care of all of the details for your family reunion vacation so you can have the time of your life.
Hello, I am Dennis. I enjoy getting the extended family together, which isn't easy. Heather with Sunkist Explorations is able to take over the planning and execution of these trips, and everyone raves over the enjoyment and memories we make. I recommend her for any of your travel needs.
Celebrate life and family with a Sunkist family reunion that will leave a lifetime of memories for everyone. I am Heather with Sunkist Explorations, and I will take care of all of the details for you at no additional cost. Call or click sunkistexplorations.com. sunkistexplorations.com.
Now's the time to weed out next summer's aquatic weed problems with the help of Coastal Aquatics. Coastal Aquatics specialized purpose-built work boats can rid your stream, pond, lake, or wetlands of next summer's weeds quickly and efficiently without chemical poisons that lead to toxic biomass buildups. Coastal Aquatics work boats operate in as little as 12 inches of water and can pull everything from duckweed to cattails out of the water by the roots. Coastal Aquatics can clear next summer's weeds out in less time, less effort, and the cleanup will last five times longer than with poisons. Think of your savings. Do not wait until it's too late. Send photos of your aquatic weed problems to coastal-aquatics.com for a free, no-obligation estimates. That's coastal-aquatics.com. Water weeds away.
My grandfather, who successfully negotiated the Great Depression out in the Badlands of Montana, had a saying that always captured my attention and confused me. He said, "You can always tell how worthless a man is by how many dogs he has." Took me a long time to figure that out, and I guess when I was out in the sticks one day, I came upon a farm that was completely overrun by dogs running wild, completely wild. And I thought, okay, Grandpa, I understand what you're talking about, because if you're not taking care of those animals, they're going to just run wild. And as the good book says, God gave people dominion over animals. What does people think that taking dominion over animals means?
Is that a question for me?
Yes, it is.
Well, and, you know,
it's a question for everybody.
You know, we have a saying here, we want to end speciesism. And that means that we don't think that any species is better than the other or should have dominion over the other, that we should all be treated fairly with respect, that animals feel pain, love, and fear just like we do. And I think if people understood that and really took it into their hearts, we would not see the amount of cruelty that we see against animals.
To me, dominion means responsibility for. So the good Lord gave us responsibility for managing our relationship with animals, which means that we do have to have some ethics about how we go about doing this. So as the director of the Cruelty Investigations Department, what do you see?
So one of my jobs is to support our community animal project. And that's a division that falls in the Cruelty Investigations Department. And it's a field work program that goes into underserved communities in southeastern Virginia and northeastern North Carolina. We see a lot of poverty, a lot of people that, you know, are lacking in a lot of ways, that don't have a lot of services offered to them. And we are seeing so much neglect and cruelty. And when it starts to get cold, it's beautiful. Yes, the snow flurries are lovely, but for us, it's significant. It means something else. It means that dogs are going to be left outside on chains, mostly in the freezing cold. And in just not too long ago, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, within a span of 2 days, we found 4 dead dogs still on their chains. There's a big problem, Michael, and I don't know if you're aware of backyard dogs or dogs who are kept outside on chains. It's really an epidemic throughout our country. It is very prevalent in the South, but we get calls and reports from all around the country of people leaving their dogs outside.
Why do they leave the dogs outside?
Well, there are many different reasons. None of them are good. People use chain dogs as cheap alarm systems because the dog will bark when people come onto the property. The dog is a possession. A lot of times people, they don't have a lot of control over their lives, but they can control this animal. People grew up with chain dogs. And so, you know, they don't really realize the suffering this dog is going through. They don't see them as sentient beings that feel pain, love, and fear, just like we do. Dogs are pack animals. They suffer not just physically, psychologically, when they're left in isolation, which is basically what keeping them on a chain does. And, you know, I don't know if it's just because we're finding them, because there are always times where our field workers visit thousands of properties, and they've been doing this for so many years that we have people that call us, you know, and we help. We deliver dog houses. We deliver straw bedding in the winter. We change out chains with lightweight tie-outs in communities where you can still chain your dog. We provide flea prevention in the summertime, deworming, food. If people have fallen on hard times and they need some help with animal food, we'll bring it out to them. We're available 24/7 for animal emergencies. And so we help, we try to do as much helping as we can, but we also have to work with law enforcement on cases of cruelty and neglect. And we're seeing a lot of starvation cases. And, you know, it's hard. It's so hard on the group because we visit these dogs. You know, there are cases that one particular case we had been visiting since 2015. And we had begged the owners. Providing dog houses, you know, flea prevention, food, giving out water in this, you know, when we arrive and the dogs don't have water, all kinds of help. And, you know, we ask people, you know, if you don't want to take care of your dog or your cat or your whatever animal that you have, you know, give them to us and we're going to do what's best for them. We could find them loving homes or, you know, at least they're not out here suffering. We begged this particular family to let us take their dogs because we saw that they were neglecting them so badly. And then we went back and the dogs were dead. You know, the dogs were skeletal. They were still on the chains. And we involved the sheriff's office. We have a good relationship with the sheriff's office in this particular county. And the two women responsible for the suffering and deaths of these dogs, they've been charged. Wow. And yeah, and we're working on several cruelty cases, actually. And so, yes, in one sense, animals are family members. But in other ways, animals are not family members and they are completely. You know, if one dog dies, they can get another dog the next day. You know, but they're totally replaceable.
You brought up something that I think points to the key difference in all of this, and that is sentience. Mm-hmm. If you see your dog as being a sentient being, which is to say it has feelings and can think, I don't see how you can be cruel to it. But if you don't see it as a sentient being, then it's easy to be cruel to it because you're not hurting anything.
Right. And, you know, field workers are wonderful in that they when we go out to a property and we see a dog that doesn't have any water or there's a lot of feces because, you know, chain dogs are forced to eat, sleep, poop, everything in that same spot. You know, even dogs that are in pens 24/7, you know, they're outside, they're in this small piece of dirt. We try to get the guardians involved in their care so that they'll see them or, you know, look how happy, you know, Blackie is when we come and see him and he wants to be around you and look how happy he is to see you and, you know, interacting with them. And why don't you bring them inside? And we're always encouraging people to bring their dogs inside where they're going to be safest and happiest. And if you're using them as an alarm system, they're going to protect you even more if they're inside the house with you. And sometimes it works. A lot of times it doesn't. We keep trying. You have to keep having faith that one day it will happen. And, you know, I also work on laws. And so when we cannot convince people to do the right thing with their animals, we have to have laws in place that we can fall back on. And it's not to punish anybody. It's not to get anybody into trouble, but we need to have them. And so local ordinances, we've had a lot of success with local ordinances where people can't chain their dogs. And there are basic duties of ownership. You know, if you're going to have your dog outside, you have to provide them with adequate shelter. And there's a definition, adequate water, adequate space. It also gives animal control and law enforcement some kind of oversight, some kind of guideline that they can use when they go onto a property. Right.
Also for the neighbors.
Yes.
The neighbors can say, you know, you're on a line.
Absolutely. a lot of times we get calls from neighbors saying, hey, can you know, I think there's something going on with the dog next door. Nobody's living there. I haven't seen the owner there for days. The dog is really skinny. Can somebody go out? Yes, absolutely. You know, and we will go out and then we'll, you know, follow next steps. Go, you know, call law enforcement if we think we have to, try to track down the owner, see if we can get custody of the animal. But yeah, you know, if people see something, they need to say something. We can't turn our backs on animals. They need us. And so if anybody is listening to this and they see an animal in their neighborhood that they don't think is being treated properly, always reach out to law enforcement or animal control. And if they're not responding, they can always call PETA. You know, we also have a division that answers calls for assistance all around the country and all around the world, really. Okay. And so they can always reach out to PETA.
I would like to take you down a little, another path. You talked about speciesism, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Animal agriculture. Yeah. Does PETA believe that people should be able to raise animals for food?
So we believe that any animal, whether it's a rat or a pig or a cow or a dog, should be given the respect that they deserve, and that animals are not ours for food. You know, PETA's mission statement is that animals are not ours to experiment on, to eat, to wear, to use for entertainment, or abuse in any other way. And so we promote a vegan lifestyle, which, you know, does not involve the cruelty and neglect that is so pervasive throughout the animal agriculture industry.
I can see how people would see that, especially with respect to CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations, where you put a whole bunch of animals that have been on grass and you shove them into feeding lots and fatten them up. I can see how that would give the appearance of cruelness. And yet, I think that's what cities are when it gets right down to it. We live in confined animal feeding operations and kind of cruel to ourselves in many respects. And then I come to the ultimate homeless animal story and wonder what we should do. And that is the feral pig population that is running rampant throughout our nation now. What do we do about the feral pigs, the hogs that are tearing up the countryside? What does PETA suggest is an answer to that?
Well, I'm not aware. Where are they tearing up the countryside?
Just about everywhere anymore. Probably the worst cases are Texas and California. They're just running totally rampant and overpopulating, mm-hmm. and taking over the countryside. And if you're a farmer or a rancher or something, they just take over your land.
You know, I don't know if PETA has taken a position on that, Michael. I think that, you know, we want animals to be treated fairly. We don't want them to be abused or neglected or treated, you know, if there's a problem with wild feral pigs, it's probably something that man has created, and we need to take care of it in a humane way. I think that, you know, if pigs are just doing what pigs are doing, right. You know, they're in their natural habitat. It's not their fault if we have encroached on their habitat in some way, or, you know, we've let the population get out of control. Then we need to take care of it in a very humane way. And I'm not sure what the answer to that is.
I'm not sure anybody does. We get right down to it. But it's something that we see a lot of landowners are having to come to grips with here, California, Texas, other places throughout the United States. And pigs are very intelligent critters.
Yes, they are.
And so when you realize how intelligent they are and how family-like and happy they are tearing up your property, you have to have some sympathy toward them. But yet you have to defend yourselves too. So I guess it's just one of those things we have to scratch our head over and try to figure out what to do.
Figure out the best possible way, because like you said, pigs are incredibly intelligent. You know, all animals, they, like I said at the beginning, every animal is someone. They want to do their thing. They want to have their families, and that's what they deserve. And that is what PETA pushes for every single day.
Well, good for you for pushing for our animals. And appreciating your joining me today on the Food Chain Radio Show. It's an honor to talk ethics with people who are ethically inclined. Ethical treatment of animals. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. How do people get in touch?
They can visit our website, PETA.org. There's a ton of information on all kinds of campaigns that we're working on. And if they see an animal who's being neglected, there's also a form that they can fill out that will come to the right person so that we can investigate.
Rachel Bellis, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.